I did put an email that we should bring a Haggadah tonight because it's just we're gonna the way the Malbim works. Oh, I should say by way of introduction, every year we choose one Haggadah. This year the Haggadah that I chose was the Malbim. It probably comes in a nicer print than this at this point. But the way the Malbim works is if you ever learned Malbim on Chumash or you ever learned Malbim on Navi, he accounts for every single word in the text. And he takes each paragraph or each set of psukim and he'll ask a series of somewhere between 3 and 8 questions, and then he'll just give a running commentary on the text, and through that running commentary, he'll answer his 3 to 8 questions that he had on that section of text. Now, it's one thing to do that with Tanakh, but to do it with the Haggadah is a whole different story. The fact that he does the same exact style, and he darshans the Haggadah like he would darshan Chumash, like he's writing his commentary on Chumash, where every single word is accounted for. So I thought it may be worthwhile to have Haggadah. There are extra Haggadahs on the shelf if anyone wants one. But so the and also the second thing is in the past few years I've been starting at the beginning and going till the end, but not really till the end. Usually, the 45 minutes are up somewhere around Avadim Hayinu or something. So I think this year I'm going to try to work backwards. I'm going to start at the end, especially since the end for the Malbim is not Nirtza. The end for the Malbim is the end of Magid. He doesn't have anything after Magid, so we could keep it all pretty much within Magid. Hopefully, by doing that, I'm not going to be losing too much of the flavor of some of the ideas that run through the entire Agada. So first, by way of introduction, part of what the Malbim tries, some of the themes that the Malbim keeps on coming back to through the Haggadah is that the person, whoever wrote the Haggadah, the Baal Haggadah, the Malbim holds very strongly, was trying to create a certain emotional feeling at different parts of the Seder, meaning at the opening part of the Seder was trying to create a sense of profound inspiration where the Magid will happen on its own. Right before Hallel, there's also trying to manipulate our emotions where the Hallel will happen on its own in a way that is extremely emotional and that's extremely that's extremely clear and loud and sincere, that the Haggadah is trying to build up this sense of emotion. So that you find throughout the commentary of the Malbim. Another theme that comes up throughout the commentary of the Malbim through the Haggadah is that the Baal Haggadah was trying to also set up on several occasions where it could have been done in a more subtle way, was dafka not trying to be subtle at certain times, and to show how we went literally from the lowest of the low to the highest of the high. Rags to riches story, and that connects to the theme of setting up our emotions. It's a nice story if you say that a guy was getting by and doing okay, and then he got a raise and he was doing better. But it's a much better story when you say that someone was really suffering and was at the bottom of the world, and then all of a sudden everything became much, much better for him. And another theme that comes up a lot in the Malbim's Haggadah is that he believes that Magid, the Magid section of the Haggadah, is primarily of the different four types of sons that we might be talking to during Magid. He believes it's primarily for the Einu Yodea Lishal, that the purpose of the Seder night is to talk to that kid. And that's why we choose just 5 psukim. The whole Magid is pretty much 5 psukim in Sefer Devarim. Instead of going through all of Bereshis and Shemos, which is where the story really is, just keep it simple, keep it in a set of psukim that can really encapsulate the entire story. And a final theme that comes up throughout the Malbim's Haggadah, before we actually begin, is the idea of 2 geulos. Now this is in many, many Haggadahs. You'll find this in the Sivasis Haggadah, and in pretty much every Haggadah that was ever written, was that the celebration of the Seder night is a double celebration. There's the Geulas HaNefesh and the Geulas HaGuf. We are celebrating our spiritual redemption as well as our physical redemption with a clear emphasis on the Geulas HaNefesh. Even though we are celebrating both and we talk about both, the clear emphasis is on the Geulas HaNefesh. So now before we begin the Malbim, just to thank the Lasky family for sponsoring tonight's shiur, L'zecher Nishmas Chaya Fredel Bas Yaakov, Allah Shalom, whose yahrzeit is tonight, and L'zechusur for Shalema, for Shalom ben Shoshana Chana, and for Rachel Miriam, Bas Shifra Yenta, they should have a refuah Shalema, B'tzoch Shar Chole Yisrael. So let's start from the end of Magid. We'll start from the close to the end of Magid. Rabbi Gamliel Haya Omer Kol Shlomer Shlosh Dvarim Eil BePesach LeYotzi Dei Chavaso VeElu Hin Pesach Matzah Maris. So says the Malbim. It's also ironic that he has different numbers of questions on each paragraph, but most of the paragraphs it's four questions. He sticks to the number four as a real theme of the night. So he says four questions on the paragraph from Gamliel Hayomer, Kol Shlomer Shlosh Dvarim Eil BePesach, which we know is from Gamliel taught that if you don't talk about these three things on Pesach, Matzah, and Maror, you're not Yotze Yechiv. Most of the posts can point out it doesn't mean you're not Yotze Yechiv at all. Probably just means you're not Yotze the Mitzvah Min HaMuvchar. But this is certainly critical, and we always point out how it is unfortunate sometimes that toward the end of Magid is when people start moving toward the kitchen to start getting, certainly the women start moving toward the kitchen to start getting the Shulchan Aruch ready and everything else ready, and they miss out on perhaps the most important part of Magid. It was Kol Shalom or Shol Shalom Eil B'Pesach, Le'yasideh Chavaso. So Malm says I got four questions on this. First of all, why is it that the Torah requires, according to Rabbi Gamliel, that we elaborate on these three mitzvahs more than we elaborate and explain the reason for any other mitzvah in the Torah? Meaning, we don't have a requirement before we put on tefillin to elaborate on the reason for tefillin. We don't have a requirement to elaborate on the mitzvah of Lulav and Esrog. Why is it dafka these three mitzvahs? There's three ma'isa mitzvahs of Pesach, Matzah, and Maror that we dafka have a mitzvah to elaborate on. Where do you find that in the Torah that the Torah says that we have to elaborate on these mitzvahs other than just doing these mitzvahs? We got the Levinuch is one story, that's Sibri Tzius Mitzrayim. Where do we find Pesach, Matzah, Maror has to be described in detail as we're doing the mitzvah? Question number two, it's odd that normally if you learn Mishnayos, when the Tana is quoted, when a Tana speaks, it's Amar Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Akiva Omer. What is it over here? Rabbi Gamliel, Haya Omer. What's that extra Haya doing in there? What does it mean, Rabbi Gamliel, Haya Omer? It doesn't say Rabbi Gamliel Omer, like Rabbi Akiva Omer. Third question, why does Baal HaGadah put this paragraph over here? Just keep in mind where this paragraph is. It's right after the Dayenu, and it's right before the Hallel. Now, to understand what he really means by that question, you have to know a little bit about what the Malm says about Dayenu. His commentary on Dayenu, without going into detail right now, I'll go into detail in about 5 minutes from now, but his commentary on Dayenu is essentially that Dayenu is an introduction to Hallel. That the entire Dayenu is meant to be an introduction to Hallel. So why would you interrupt between the Dayenu and the Hallel with Pesach Matzah Maror? This is not. There are two places that would have made more sense to have Pesach Matzah Maror. Either when you're actually doing the mitzvos later on, or earlier when you're telling the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim by Avad Mayinu. So you'll talk about Pesach Al Shema, Matzah Al Shema, Maror. That would make sense. Why Dafka right between the Dayenu and the Hallel? And then the final question. It's also odd. We say Matzah Zu, Maror Zeh. Why not just say Matzah Shanu Ochlim, Maror Shanu Ochlim? What's the zoo and the zeh that we emphasize over here? So those are the four questions. The Malbim suggests the following idea. It says, when it comes to the mitzvah saseh of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, the pasuk that we're trying to fulfill in the Torah is V'gadta levincha bayom ahu lemor, ba'avur zeh asa Hashem li b'tzeisim Mitzrayim. That you should tell your children on that day, saying, ba'avur zeh asa Hashem li b'tzeisim Mitzrayim. Ba'avur zeh. Whenever you have the word zeh in the Torah, zeh always means that you see something with great clarity, that you could point to it, that it's right in front of you. That's why Chazal Darshan, he doesn't mention this, but that's why Chazal Darshan, when they talk about how everyone at Kriyas Yamsuf had a higher level of nevuah than Yecheskel Hanavi had at Kriyas Yamsuf, where do they get that idea that everyone at Kriyas Yamsuf saw God more clearly than Yecheskel Hanavi? Because they used the term zeh keli va'anvehu. How can you say zeh keli? It means that you were able to point, right? You were right in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that they saw with great clarity. Bavur zeh means that there's something there. There's a prop there. There's something you could point to and say, yes, it's this. This is what it's all about. So bavur zeh is about the Pesach Matzah Maror that are in front of us. The word ba'avur implies, says the Malbim, sheyivayer lo libno, Echa Pesach va'matzah amara munachim lefanav mechavnim neged Yetzias Mitzrayim. Ba'avur means you're supposed to explain the connection between the mitzvah and the actual Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. So why is it that we don't have such a din by tefillin? We don't have such a din by lulav? Because it never says ba'avur zeh by those mitzvahs. It just says you have to do those mitzvahs. And there may be meaning to those mitzvahs, and they may be about Zeichel Yetzias Mitzrayim, but it never says in the Torah that you have to say it. Vigatil Vilcha says, but avor ze, you need to actually associate these mitzvos, not to fulfill the mitzvah of matzah, but to fulfill the mitzvah of Vigatil Vilcha. That Vigatil Vilcha requires, what should you, see a lot of, you could misunderstand this pasuk, you could misread this pasuk as, Vigatil Vilcha v'yom hulema b'avor ze asa Hashem li b'tzeis Mitzrayim, telling him a basic story about why Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim. No, he's saying, Vigatil Vilcha v'yom hulema, these are the words you should say, this is the message you need to impart. You need to impart that it is, b'avor ze, that it's because of these mitzvos that Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim, and to relate the mitzvos to how Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim. And he says that's why Kol Shalom Shlosh Nor Melu BePesach Lo Yatzi Yedei Chavaso. That's why he's not Yotzi his Chiyuv. What Chiyuv? Not Pesach Matzah Mar. He's not Yotzi his Chiyuv of Vigadta Levincha. And that's why it's Matzah Zu Mar Zeh, to show that it's directly in front of us, that it's something that we're able to clearly identify. And this was something that's not just from Gamliel Amar or Amar Rabbi Gamliel. Rabbi Gamliel Haya Omer. Haya implies that was something he used to say all the time, because this was something he pointed out every year at the Seder, that this is what it's all about. This is the mitzvah. Now we're about to do Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. So that's Rabbi Gamliel Haya Omer. Why is it over here? Why does the Baal Haggadah put it over here? So he points out that the very next paragraph of the Haggadah, there's one more paragraph before we get to the Hallel, and that's Bechol Dover Dar Chayav Adam Liros Satzmo Kilu Yatsum Mitzrayim Shenemar Vigadta Levincha Bayom Ulemar Bavor Ze Asa Hashem Li B'Tesim Mitzrayim. The next paragraph of the Haggadah is going to darshan the same pasuk. So to just put Rami Gamliel somewhere else, we would have lost out on the value, on how this entire drush of Rami Gamliel is really based on that pasuk. So we associate it with the other paragraph that actually quotes this pasuk, that actually says this pasuk, V'gadta levincha b'yomuhu lemar b'avur zeh, because that's what Rami Gamliel is all about. It's all about that pasuk. So that's his understanding of the Rami Gamliel Haya Omer. Just continuing along that line, along those lines, he then goes on to discuss the Matzah Zu Sha'anu Ochlin paragraph. He doesn't have a whole explanation of Marzeh or of Karban Pesach, but he has Matzah Zu Sha'anu Ochlin. So he has three questions on Matzah Zu Sha'anu Ochlin. Question number one, he says, why is it such a great chesed that our dough didn't have a chance to rise? Wouldn't it have been so much more awesome if our dough did have a chance to rise and every year we had to celebrate by eating good bread instead of eating bad bread? So why is it such a wonderful thing that our dough didn't have a chance to rise? So much so that we named the whole Chag after the fact that the dough didn't have a chance to rise. That it's Chag HaMatzos. We should have called the Chag something else, something Chag HaGeula, something. Chag HaMatzos, because the dough didn't have a chance to rise. Why is that like the greatest thing in the world? Second of all, Kashem, just like Yetzias Mitzrayim happened, Kadosh Baruch Hu forced Paro to let the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim, and Kadosh Baruch Hu was running the show and was calling all the shots. So couldn't Kadosh Baruch Hu have allowed Paro to have the self-control to keep him in for a little bit longer? Meaning, why not give us a chance for our dough to rise so that we can get out in a normal way where we don't have to be rushing? Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu make it if he allowed power to hold on for this long? He couldn't allow power to hold on for more than 18 minutes? He couldn't allow power to hold on for just a little bit longer? Why did Dafka have to be at that point? And he says, Lefia inyan yoser haya la kosov lichtov v'lo naslum lehismamea. Look what it says. It said the way the Haggadah says it is that Kigarshu mivitzrayim v'lo yachlu lehismamea. V'lo yachlu lehismamea. What is lo yachlu lehismamea? They were unable to delay. Now, if the Haggadah is trying to tell us that the Mitzrayim wanted us out and they were throwing us out as quick as possible because they didn't want us there, it should not have said lo yachlu lehismamea. It should have said lo nastum lehismamea, that they didn't allow us to wait. They needed us out of there as quickly as possible. But it doesn't say that. It makes it sound like it's the Jewish, it's from the perspective of Klal Yisrael, that lo yachlu lismameya. So the Malam says, because that's exactly correct. It is from the perspective of Klal Yisrael, and this speaks to the entire theme of the whole Yantif and the entire theme of the Haggadah. As we've mentioned before, there are two Geulos that happen that we're celebrating on the night of the Seder. There's the Geulas Haguf and the Geulas HaNefesh. We had physical slavery, and we were in spiritually a very bad place. So what we're doing when we make a big deal out of the matzah is we're showing which one is really primary. Why did we have to be rushed out? It wasn't because of the physical slavery. The physical slavery had actually stopped a while ago, and physically it would have been more comfortable for us to stay a little bit longer and not to be rushed out. we had to be rushed out because of Memtes Sharei Tuma, because another moment and you would not have been able to tell the difference between a Jew and a Mitzri, and physically we would have been fine, but we would have been indistinguishable from the lowest of the low, from the worst members of society. We never would have been able to become a Mamlechas Kohen and Vagai Kadosh had we stayed there for a moment longer. So that's why Lo Yachlu Lis Mameya. It wasn't that they wouldn't allow us. It was Lo Yachlu Lis Mameya. We couldn't do it. We couldn't tolerate staying there any longer. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu made sure that Paro would lose patience now and get us out of there now. Not because we physically need it, but because we spiritually need it. And that's why, he says, we name the whole Chag, Chag HaMatzos, so that we don't lose sight of that fact. Because Chag HaMatzos is clearly not celebrating any great physical accomplishment. When you're eating lechem only, you're eating poor man's bread. That's not celebrating being a king. What the Iker celebration is that we had to get out because HaKadosh Baruch Hu saved us spiritually. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was worried about our spiritual well-being. So we're pretty much concluding the Magid section of the Haggadah with an emphatic statement about how it's not about the physical avdus and the physical geula. That's part of the story, but that's a detail in the much bigger story of the spiritual avdus and the spiritual geula. Moving backwards, so right before that section comes the section of Dayenu. So the Malam asks several questions about Dayenu. First of all, he says, how do we start out the Dayenu? We say, Kama ma'alos tovos l'makom aleinu. When you say that someone has ma'alos, what does that mean? What does the word mean here, ma'alos? So normally, the word, when you talk about nisim, so the word is nes. You talk about miracles, the word is nes. You talk about chesed, so you would say, I don't know, ma'asim tovim, or something like that. Ma'alos tovos. What are we describing? We're describing Hashem's nes and Hashem's nisim and Hashem's chesed with us. And we use this term ma'alos. What does the word ma'alos mean? Why does that word fit over here? I know when you talk in Shiduchim, you say, he's got alamailos. Alamailos means all the great qualities. But we don't list Hashem's qualities in the Dayenu. We list what Hashem did for us. He did this, that, and the other thing. What's kama ma'alos tovos l'makom aleinu? That's question one of the Dayenu. And I should just point out, when reading the Malam Sagada, the questions are probably the most valuable part. Meaning, even if the way a Seder should work, as should be obvious to all of us, is not that anyone, whether it be child or adult, should be sitting there darshaning the whole time exactly what that. The way it should work is obviously extremely interactive, and when children are a little older and they're able to have an intelligent discussion, so it should be with intelligent discussion of interesting questions. The Malam's questions are questions that are, some are obvious and everyone asks, and some are very Malbim-like and are unique and interesting. So whether you like his answers or not, the questions are extraordinarily valuable. So, okay, that's question number one on the Dayenu, the Ma'alos. Second question is, the whole point of Dayenu is, the way we often translate the word Dayenu is, it would have been enough. Malbim points out what all the Mefarshei Haggadah point out, no, it wouldn't have. None of them would have been enough without it. And he says, not just would it not have been enough had, let's say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu not split the sea for us, that obviously we would have died, and then why would that be enough? He says, it's kfira to say it would have been enough had we not gotten the Torah. So how could we say, Dayenu, about any of these things? We need it all. Had Hashem not given us the man, then we all would have been dead. And it would not have been enough, because we would all be dead. We wouldn't be here to talk about it. So what does that mean, Dayenu, it would have been enough? 30 says, at the end, after we say all the Dayenus, we finish singing it, Al achas kama v'kama tova chvulu m'chapelos l'makom aleinu, all the more so that Hashem did, had he done any one of these things, would have been all the more so that he did all of these things. And then again, we list them all. Asabem shvatim, asabem lugayim, avargas b'karim, nasalas monim, etc., etc. Well, I don't know on my own that better than doing one favor is doing two favors, and better than two is three, and better than three is alachas kama v'kama, and then we have to list all of it. Of course, alachas kama v'kama. It's something that we should be grateful for, and we should, and that Hashem did great things for us. Of course, that's better than Hashem doing one thing for us or two things for us is doing all of these things for us. Not only that, the expressions that the paragraph uses in describing how we would have to praise Hashem, how we are required to praise Hashem for all that he has done. So we use pretty much every expression of praise that you can imagine. We talk about the lahodos, lahalel, l'shabeach. That essentially all means to praise Hashem. So we get it. It's to praise Hashem. Why all these different expressions, as if we can't come up with enough words to say praise? We understand the word praise means praise. Why do you have to keep on saying it over and over again? So the Malm says, fundamentally, we have to understand that Dayenu is the transition between Magid and Hallel. It's the bridge that takes us from Magid to Hallel. So after we told all the stories and gave all the drushas from the Pesukim, so now we turn toward Hallel. And if we're going to turn to a new part of the Seder, and this is something I mentioned before, the Malm is very into this, if we're going to turn to a new part of the Seder, we need to turn to it in an inspired way. We need to turn to that new part of the Seder, we need to turn to Hallel, where it's not just, okay, let's say Hallel, it's that Hallel is going to come out of our mouths naturally because of the way we feel at that point of the Seder. So it needs a proper introduction. If we're going to feel the proper way when we say hello, it needs a proper introduction. So we have to be, we have to say all sorts of shevach for everything that that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has done for us. So he says, we add what the key to understanding the whole Dayenu is what the word Dayenu actually means and what the word Maila actually means. He says, Maila ubira mila ma'alos does not mean how the qualities of Hashem, the miracles of Hashem, the favors of Hashem. Ma'alos means Tihilos v'tishbachos, la'ala u'lekelas, that when we describe tihilos, we describe praises, that's what ma'alos means. Kama ma'alos tovos la'makom aleinu means how much praise we have to give. La'makom aleinu is on our shoulders to give, is our responsibility to give. That's what's aleinu. Kama ma'alos tovos la'makom, how much praise we have to give to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And he says that's, dayenu doesn't mean it would have been enough in the sense of this act would have been enough had God only done this. That's not what it means. It's not about the ma'aseh. Dayenu means it would have been enough reason for us to give all the praise we could ever imagine. Meaning to get a miracle like the man. Can you imagine a miracle like the man happening? A person not knowing where his next meal is coming from, he's in the middle of a desert, even on an individual basis. A person all alone in the middle of the desert doesn't know where his next meal is coming from, and all of a sudden this food comes down from heaven, and it's just the right amount, and it tastes perfect, and it's exactly what he needs to nourish his body. And this happens over and over again, every single day. Is there enough shevach for a person to give to HaKadosh Baruch Hu to thank Hashem for a miracle like that? There are no words. Ilu finu malishira kayom l'shonenu rina kamon galav v'sosenu shevach kamer chavei rakia. We would never be able to have the words. Our human capacity is simply not enough to be able to say all the shevach and the halal and the odah that we should have to say for any one of those miracles. That's what Dayenu means. Dayenu doesn't mean we would have been fine without it. Of course we wouldn't have been fine. We would have been dead without most of these miracles, spiritually or physically dead, one way or the other. Dayenu means that it would have been enough reason to say the ma'alos, to say the praises, and that's why we keep on using all these different words for praises. L'hodos, l'alel, l'shabeach, as if we just don't even know how to say it anymore, because we're overwhelmed with wanting to say. So we go through this whole story, all of these miracles, all of these things, where each one in its own right would be a reason to praise Hashem to no end. Alachas kama v'kama, that we don't have the wherewithal to praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu as much as we should, because He did all of these things for us. And what does that lead us right into? Hallel. Now we're inspired to say Hallel. When you read a paragraph like that and you think about the Shevach we have to give to Hashem, so the natural thing is, okay, I'm going to try. We're breathless. I'm going to try. I'm going to give my best shot to say Hallel. And we're going to sing the Hallel where you hear it screaming from the rooftops, how the Gemara describes. In Yerushalayim, you'd hear the rooftops were shaking because of the sounds of Hallel coming from the roof. Because that was an emotive Hallel. We were emoting everything that we were feeling at the end of HaSipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. I think that answers all the questions. Moving backwards. So the Malbim, let's move into the actual darshaning of the. So he has a couple of simple ha'aros about the makos, which I think a lot of other people have. Just when it comes to the makos, he says, for instance, when we tzvardeya means frog or alligators or whatever it means, but it's singular. Kinim is plural. So the simple hara I think a lot of other people have is why tzvardeya in the singular and kinim in the plural? Because there were many kinim and there was only one tzvardeya. I mean, the makkah that Hashem brought to Mitzrayim was just one big tzvardeya, and then we just kept hitting it, so it became many. But it was really, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was only one tzvardeya. And another simple hara on the makkos, without asking any questions, was just makkas bechoras. All the other makkos are called just by one name. Dam, Tzvardeya, Kinim, Arav, Devrash, Kinim. Why is it Makas Bechoros? Why isn't it just Bechoros? So again, just very Pasha Peshavi says that it could be because it's the last one, so we want to end on with some oomph. But he said more likely, dam. We understand that is the plague. The plague is blood. Tzvardeya, it's a plague to have that around. Kinim, all these things are bad to have around. You understand what the plague is when you just say the word. Bechoros are not really a plague. They're usually a good thing. Bechoros, it only becomes a plague when you call it makas bechoros, when you actually describe what happened to the bechoros. Otherwise, it's not a plague at all, says the Malbim. So that's just some very brief ha'aros on the makos. But one thing we should realize is that, if we're not sufficiently familiar with the structure of the Haggadah, is that the primary Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim is really a series of five psukim in Sefer Devarim. And the Malbim talks about this at the beginning of the Haggadah, where why is it? It's really remarkable. It's really unbelievable. You're going to tell the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Where is the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim in the Torah? So it's very clear where the story is. It's the end of Bereishis is the beginnings of it, how Yosef went down to Mitzrayim. And then the first half of Sefer Shemos. That's where the story is. And yet, what do we choose to use to describe the story? Five psukim about how when a farmer brings his bikurim, he says these five psukim. And that's the whole Haggadah, is five psukim in the middle of Sefer Devarim. A lot of times we run through it so quickly we don't even realize what's going on. What we're doing is we quote one pasuk, and then we break down each phrase in that pasuk and explain what each phrase in the pasuk means. Then we quote the next pasuk, each phrase in that pasuk, and then it's a total of five psukim. The whole thing is just five psukim. So the Malbim points out that pashup shat, the reason we do that, is because we have to tell the story in one night. And if you have to tell the story in one night, you can't learn the end of Sefer Bereishis and the entire first half of Sefer Shemos in a single night. It would just be impossible. And he said, that's the beauty of Mishneh Torah. Mishneh Torah is the review of the rest of Kol HaTorah Kula. A really good review would allude to every critical factor within a shorter series of psukim. So he says, within these five psukim, the Baal HaGadah is able to draw out every critical factor, with a couple of exceptions, he says, and those exceptions are going to account for some of the things we say before we dash in these psukim, but pretty much every critical factor of the story is described in these five psukim, and that's why we use the five psukim, because it's a manageable number. So moving toward the end of the drushos on these five psukim, so one of the things we mention in the Haggadah is Uvamora Gadol. So we darshan uvamora gadol. So the Malbim emphasizes that when we talk about that mora gadol, the Haggadah says that refers to giloy shchina. That Kadosh Baruch Hu was megaleh shchina to us, like it says, and it quotes psukim, other psukim to strengthen that point that it's giloy shchina. So he says the idea is mora over here is being darshan milashon mare, that we're able to see. Mora normally means fear, but Gilui Shechina means something is revealed that's normally covered from us. We're able to see something that otherwise we would not see. So it's the Gilui Yad Hashem. How did the Gilui Yad Hashem happen? Through Osos and Mofsim, through all the miracles that Hashem did for us, it became very clear that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was running everything, and that nothing was left to chance, and nothing was left to Teva. And that was clearly for the good of Klal Yisrael, to get Klal Yisrael out of the culture of the Avodah Zarah of Mitzrayim. And that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu was machmed leiv Mitzrayim to send us out, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if he wanted to take us out, could have done it very quickly. He could have just taken us out, but he put Mitzrayim through a whole series of exercises so that we can have Gilui Shechina. You see, if we would just come out in one event, so it was a one-time event, and it wouldn't, things happen sometimes where nations rise and nations fall, but if there's a series of events over and over and over again where HaKadosh Baruch Hu is playing with Paro like he's a toy in the palm of his hand, and it's just become so obvious that HaKadosh Baruch Hu over and over again is doing things L'tovas Klal Yisrael and for the suffering of the Mitzrim, that's the Gilui Shechina. That's how we see that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is running a Dafka for the benefit of Klal Yisrael. That's of Mora Gadol Zu Gilui Shechina. Okay, further back in the Haggadah, so we darsh in the Pesukim. The Pesuk says, Vayar Hashem es anyenu, Hashem saw our suffering. So we say, what does es anyenu mean? What does it mean? Zu precious derech eretz. That's the fact that we people weren't able to have marital relations anymore. What does amaleinu mean? So the Haggadah says, Elu habanim. That refers to the sons. Why would I'm to the sons? K'mashneimar, kalaben hayilod hayorit hashlichu v'chalabastich hayun. the sons are thrown into the river, and the daughters are kept alive. Says the Malam, I got two questions over here. First of all, Amaleinu Elu Habanim? Where do you see that in the word? Amaleinu means hard work. So Elu Habanim, that refers to Banim? How is that Banim? How does Amaleinu mean Banim? And second of all, the pasuk doesn't prove it. Pasuk just says Kol Abena Yelod Eretz Hashlichu. It doesn't prove that the word Amaleinu means banim. Where do you see Amaleinu means banim? Second of all, why would we mention the second half of that pasuk? Kol Abena Yelod Eretz Hashlichu. Yeah, we want to talk about how awful Paro was. Look what he did to us. He made us throw our sons into the river. V'kalabas techayun, and he kept our daughters alive. That's a good thing, isn't that right? We're happy that he kept our daughters alive. At least that. Why would we want to emphasize this? Isn't the whole point of the story tonight supposed to be about how bad Paro was? Why would we emphasize Kolabas Tichayun over here? So the Malbim says that you have to, and the Malbim is very sensitive to the nuances of Hebrew language. He says, what does Amaleinu mean? So we translate it as hard work. Okay, what does Malacha mean? Work. What does Avoda mean? Work. It all means work. There are lots of words in Hebrew for work, but there are no two words in Hebrew that mean the same thing. Amaleinu does not mean Malacha, does not mean Avoda. It's something else. He says Avoda could be something that someone else forces us into. Amaleinu is something that we are self-motivated to work for. Something that we want. You have a person who has a job that he works long hours, works very, very hard in the office, but somehow on weekends he loves tending to his garden, let's say. And he puts so much work into this garden. So much work, harder than he works in the office, but no one's forcing him to do it. It's a different kind of work. It's qualitatively a different kind of work because it's something that he chose to do. It's something that he wants to put work into. Amelus b'torah. That idea is that it shouldn't be an avoda b'torah. It should be a amelus b'torah. Our amelus in Torah should be something that it just makes our soul sing. It's something that we want to connect to, that we want to do. And it's hard sometimes. And sometimes with amelus, the Malbim says, it doesn't bear fruit. Sometimes it doesn't quite work out. But it's something that we put ourselves in the position to do. So he says, amelus elu habanim. Because with everything they were making us do, all the hard work they were making us do, there was one thing, there was one place where we were doing it ourselves. It's not easy to raise children, but that's something that we wanted to do. It's something we were interested in doing. That's our family life. And it's not easy. It's hard. It's work. But it's work that we were interested in doing. And Paro took that away from us also. The fact that he took that away from us, not just that he made us work hard, that instead of having a boss who makes you work long hours, so we had a slave master. That's one thing. But he even took away our amelus. He even took away what we were working for. He says, the Pashup Shat, why it says Kalabas Techayun, is because there's a rule called Pasuk Tol Paskin Moshe, Anan Lo Paskin Anlay, that if you can't quote a half a Pasuk, that's really why it says Kalabas Techayun. But he says, you know, Chazal say that the Gamba Zeh, Haisa Kavanosa L'Ra'a, Sheikh Yabanos. What does it mean if he's going to kill all the boys and keep the girls alive? What's every father's concern as soon as his daughter's born is, oh no, who's going to marry her? Who's going to be the guy that's going to take her away from me? That's going to, you know, what kind of person is this going to be? What kind of a... So that's the immediate concern. Now, can you imagine if every Jewish boy is gone and the Jewish girls are still there? So what kind of life are you bringing your daughter into? Kolabas Techayun was part of the evil of Paro, that the Mitzvah will have their way with all the Jewish daughters, and that every Jewish father is going to have to live with that concern on his mind of what's going to be with my daughter, because there are no good Jewish boys left. There is no one for my daughter to marry. So that's also part of the part of the evils of Paro. And then the paragraph goes on. Ve'es lachatzenu. What's lachatzenu? Zohadchak. So I never knew how to translate that. What does Zohar d'chak mean? That's d'chak. D'chak means pressure, right? Lachatz is pressure. V'kemoshen emar, v'gamri isiyas ha-lachatz asher mitzrayim lochatzim osam. So the Malbim asks two questions on that part of the paragraph. He says, what does it mean, Zohar d'chak? What kind of pressure? What's he talking about? That we have to make a certain number of bricks every single day? Is that what we're referring to by lachatzenu? The lachatz asher mitzrayim lochatzim osam? And also, what's the pasuk really proving? The pasuk says gamri isiyas ha-lachatz, but how does that prove that it's tachak? Meaning, we're saying lachatzenu means tachak. K'mashen emar, as the pasuk says, gamri isiyas ha-lachatz asher mitzrayim lochatzim osam. It doesn't say anything about tachak in that pasuk. It just says lachatz. How do I know that lachatz means tachak? So the Malbim points out that lachatz could mean two things. It could mean a lack of our basic necessities, things that we need, bread, water. That's one type of lachatz. A second type of lachatz is l'chitzas haguf b'makom tsar, is squeezing our bodies into a small, narrow area, a physical constriction. So lachatz means constriction. It could be constriction in that we simply don't have the supplies that we need to live, or it could be a physical constriction, like we have batilachetz regel bilam el hakir. What does that mean? That the donkey was riding and he pushes Bilam's leg up against the wall, that he didn't have the space for his leg anymore. It was a physical lachatz that it could be describing. So the Malam says, which of these two definitions of lachatz is the Agada referring to? He says, I have a raya that it can't be the first. Because when Klal Yisrael complains in the Midbar, what's the first thing they say? Zacharnu es hadaga shenachalnu b'mitzrayim. We remember the food that we used to have. We had plenty of... For everything that was bad in Mitzrayim, food wasn't one of them, apparently. Because Klal Yisrael remembers having delicious food in Mitzrayim. There wasn't a lack of water, there wasn't a lack of food. There was a lack of dignity, and a lack of spirituality, and a lack of, there was a lack of everything else, but there wasn't a lack of basic supplies, of basic sustenance. So can't be talking about that kind of lachatz. But you know what kind of lachatz there was in Mitzrayim? It was a physical lachatz, physically constricting. We all had to live in a little ghetto, in Goshen, in a makom tsar. And that's the lachatz that we're remembering. So he says, Zod chak, that's what we're referring to when we say lachatz. And we're not bringing a raya from the pasuk that lachatz means dechak. Because just that the word lachatz is a reference to what Mitzrayim did to us when we say that, and that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was sensitive to that lachatz. That's why it doesn't say shenemar. Shenemar would mean to prove that it's dechak. It says kima shenemar, like it's expounded on in Sefer Shemos, where it actually talks about the lachatz, that Hashem saw the lachatz, that Hashem saw how uncomfortable it was, that we were all on top of each other. You think of Rahman al-Islam, the concentration camps during the Holocaust, of just being physically, people, you know, in barracks on top of each other, in the cattle cars, just physically having no space, having no room. And Kadosh Baruch Hu says, that's what I saw. I saw that lachatz, and a human being loses their sense of dignity very quickly when they don't have their own space. A person needs a little bit of space. He needs a little bit of space emotionally, but he needs a little bit of space physically also. And if you don't have your own space, then we lose our sense of dignity. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu realizes that. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I see that lachatz, and that's why I wanted to take you out of Mitzrayim. That's one of the motivations of taking you out of Mitzrayim. Okay. Again, moving backwards. I'll try to skip to... Oh, we're ready, right? Okay. Okay, so let's go to Arami Ovidavi. Might as well. Okay, Tseiluman Ma Bikesh Lovin Arami Lasos the Yaakov Avinu. Let's go out and learn what did Lovin want to do to Yaakov Avinu. The Paru was only goes on his Charim, and Lovin wanted to uproot everything. Shenema Arami Ovidavi Verim Mitzrayim. So a couple of four questions Malm asks over here. He says Pshuto Shel Mikra Arami Ovidavi refers to Yaakov Avinu. That Yaakov was an Arami Ovid. He was a lost Armenian who was, or whatever, however you say it in English. He was a lost Arami guy who is running, who's wandering around. So where do we get the idea that it's a reference to Lavan? Arami Ovid is a reference to Lavan. Also, Tseilamad, go out and learn. Why can't I stay here and learn? What does it mean, go out and learn? Tseilamad. We have Tashema in the Gemara. Come and hear. Right? What's Tseilamad? Also, ulamad sounds like it's something that's not explicit over here, but we're quoting an explicit pasuk, Arami Avidavi. And also, this night of Yitzias Mitzrayim, the final question he asked, this night of Yitzias Mitzrayim is supposed to speak about all the awful things Paro wanted to do, so to Klal Yisrael. So what do we talk about? How do we start the story of all the awful things Paro did? He wasn't quite as bad as Lavan. You know, Lavan was a lot worse than Paro. Why don't we start the story with that? We want to say how bad Paro was. Why don't we start with, oh, well, yeah, he was bad, but Lavan was even worse. Lavan wanted everyone God. So he points out, Ha'nacha muchletas ki akosav Arami Ovidavi midaber b'Lavan. He says, the main point of this little paragraph is to prove that Arami Ovidavi is about Lavan, it's not about Yaakov. And it cannot be about Yaakov. Because if it were about Yaakov, it would be two conflicting messages in the same phrase. Because the Lashon of Arami means when you describe someone as in America as an American, you describe someone in France as a Frenchman, you're describing someone who's at home. You're describing someone who belongs, who's a citizen, who's a person of that place. And then, yet, is it right? So we're describing someone who's called Al Shem Makomo. And then Oved, you're describing someone who's lost, who's nowhere, who's wandering, who doesn't have a place. So the word Arami and the word Oved don't fit together. They can't be a description of the same person if they're describing a person. Whenever the Torah uses terms like Ger v'Toshav, Chazal have a drasha on it, because it can't be. You can't be a Ger and a Toshav. Sort of Soloveitchik has a famous drasha on that one, but the terms themselves are conflicting terms. So the drush comes to show us from Paro that Lavan wanted to be Oker HaKol, because Paro goes on the Zecharim, and it doesn't say a Lashon of Ibud by Paro. It says a Lashon of Oved only by Lavan. So from that it's Muchach that Lavan wanted to do worse than Paro. Meaning, the only reason we're mentioning how Paro was not destroying everything, did not want to destroy everything, was not to be nice to Paro and to make it look good for Paro, was to emphasize that that's the only way that we know what the word Oved means over here. Arami Oved does not mean a lost Arami person. It means there was a guy, an Arami guy, namely Lavan, who Oved Avi, who wanted to utterly destroy and wipe out, as a Lashon of an Avedav, make lost, if he wanted to completely destroy. Ibud, complete destruction. He wanted to completely destroy my father. So that's why we what's the lashon say lamad? Because the only way to prove what this pasuk means is by comparing it to the pasukim by Paro. Because by Paro it never says Oved, it never says Ibud. So that's what we have to see, that Lavan must have been doing something that even Paro and all of his rituals didn't do. So Tzei Lamad, this is not something you can get straight from this pasuk. This is something that you need to be Tzei, you need to go out and learn it from somewhere else. And without that proof from Paro, we never would have gotten what this is really all about. Okay, I'll finish with something small. The Ein Yodei Lishal, I mentioned before, the Malbim holds that the Ein Yodei Lishal is the point of the entire Haggadah. That the whole, we save him for last because he's the guy we're talking to throughout the Haggadah. He says the Lashon of At Pesachlo to the Ein Yodei Lishal is that, he says, a very important Lashon, does not say At Emorlo, that you should say to the Ein Yodei Lishal. No, saying would imply that you sit and lecture him. You do not lecture the Ein Yodei Lishal. You figure out a way that he can relate and that he will be able to ask questions. It reminds me, I read recently of a study that was a very famous study that was done by a Harvard professor together with a principal from San Diego, I believe, where they went to teachers at the first grade level teachers, and they told teachers that there are these five children in your class that are extremely brilliant. They're super talented. They're extremely brilliant. And they picked five random kids. They didn't actually test any of the kids. So they gave five, and they told that to the teachers. And then they tracked how the kids progressed in comparison to the rest of the class. And it turned out that their IQ went up by almost double what everyone else's IQ went up in that school year. And not only that, in the subsequent school years, when teachers weren't told anything, once that trend was set, their IQ still grew at a more rapid rate than everybody else. Why? Because if the teacher thought this kid is brilliant, so the teacher's trying to explain it to the kid doesn't get it, the teacher says it must be my fault, I must not be doing it right. I have to adjust how I'm teaching it, where the kid's going to get it, where I'll see the light bulb over the kid's head, because this kid is brilliant. So of course he's able to get it. Because very often, when you have an Ein Yodei Lishal, you say, okay, listen, you're not going to get it anyway, just take a pen in your hand, and this is what you should write. Write these words, you know, and just, because you know you can't connect, he's not going to understand anything anyway. No, that's not the way we relate to the Ein Yodei Lishal. The whole Seder is about relating to the Ein Yodei Lishal by inspiring him to Pesachlo, to have him ask questions. That's why he's the whole point of the entire Seder night. Okay.